Welcome to Tribecast. I'm Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. Welcome to another episode of Tribecast. And this one's going to be a little bit different because we are going back in the vault to pull out a conversation that I had with Jim Caval in 2016 when he was the president of the brand and he was running the first show called Tribecast for the Iron Tribe brand. And he interviewed me on my story as a businessman, as an entrepreneur, as a growing franchisor, and my experience in the fitness business from franchisee to master franchisee with a previous concept to ultimately starting Iron Tribe from the ground up. And we got to cover my entire story of who is Forrest and what am I all about. I realized that when I started this podcast, I just dove straight in with content because I wanted to deliver maximum value. But I do think it's important that you know who I am, what I've done, and my view on business. And so this was just a great podcast that I re-listened to the other day that I wanted to launch again. Jim does a great job of interviewing me. As you've heard, he's been on the show already a few weeks ago and is a very successful entrepreneur in his own right. Since I bought him out of Iron Tribe, he has started his own brand called Influencer, in which I'm an investor in. And so we still have a great relationship to this day. And he's in one of my small group accountability Bible studies. And a great friend. So he does a phenomenal job of teeing up the conversation on who is Forrest and what I've done up to this point. I think you'll enjoy getting a little bit of the backstory. So enjoy my conversation with Jim Caval.
This one is one that's near and dear to my heart because I get to talk to a guy that I have a lot of respect for. Our team all has a tremendous amount of respect for. And those who know him here in our Birmingham market where Iron Tribe began have a tremendous amount of respect for him. That's because he's our leader. It's Forrest Walden, the founder and CEO of the Iron Tribe brand, a guy I get the pleasure of calling my business partner. And together we've been at this thing now for almost 6 years. But Forrest has been at it a lot longer in the fitness industry. So in this interview, you're gonna get a chance to know this guy in a lot of different ways. Beyond how most people know him, because you're going to get to hear his story, hear his experience in over 2 decades in the fitness industry. He's seen a lot happen. He's seen a lot of things come and a lot of things go. And you're also going to get to know him a little bit personally, which is fun because Forrest is a very dynamic guy. So without further ado, here's Forrest Walden. All right, so Forrest, I've been wanting to wrangle you in and do this interview for a while. I know you've heard a bunch of our Tribecast shows. So first off, thanks for making the time because I know you're busy to make this happen.
Well, thanks for putting me on. After the panel of guests you've had recently, I'm honored to be on.
Okay, so we could go in a lot of different directions. You and I could talk about fitness, about business, about just franchising and the state of the industry for probably hours. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to really start with just your story because there's a lot of franchising and fitness woven into really the past 2 decades. You're a veteran in both industries. And so let's just start with your story and especially how it pertains to those two industries.
Yeah, just quickly, when I finished high school, the only thing I loved to do was play football, and which led to a lot of working out. And so when I got to Auburn, the only thing that I enjoyed, that I was passionate about, was working out, which led me to exercise science, which led me to being on the cheerleading team at Auburn because I wasn't big enough or fast enough to play football, and was one of those rare students who never changed his major, studied exercise science all the way through, just didn't know what I was going to do with it. And my professors certainly couldn't tell me. This is really before personal training came on the scene. Not one professor in Auburn told me to even consider personal training. But I started doing it as a default because I was a competitive bodybuilder, doing competitions and trying to be in the best shape I could possibly be in, which led to people asking me how to get in shape, how to build their arms, how to get abs, those type things. And so I was training people in a gym for free back in 1996 at Kaz Gym. Bill Kazmaier, former World's Strongest Man, I used to run his gym. And so I've been doing it quite a while. When I got out, that led to personal training, which I did for 3 years successfully, but realized I was trading time for money and wasn't seeing my new wife much and really wanted to create some scale and some leverage in my life. So I was at a crisis of belief if I could really make it in the fitness industry as a true career. And so I started researching options, came across a franchise opportunity out of Denver, Colorado called Fitness Together, one-on-one personal training, and ended up investing in that model and opening the first Fitness Together in the Southeast June 4th of 2001 at the ripe old age of 23.
Okay, so before we even keep going, because I do want you to tell your whole story to get from 23 to where you are today, and there's a couple decades still left in there, but before we even keep going, I want you to tell the story of Forrest, the technician, getting off the plane in Denver. You had just decided you were going to go out there and buy a franchise and go from really Forrest, the technician, the trainer, the guy who knows a lot about fitness and how to train people successfully, to Forrest the entrepreneur. And so tell the story of the founder picking you up at the airport. It was still early in his franchising days, taking you to his basement to do training, and he decides to pull over on the side of the road.
Yeah, it's a great story. I wrote about it in my book, but it was really a turning point for me because I went up there just complete technician mindset. I was, all I'd ever known was fitness, all I ever read about was fitness, all I ever studied was fitness. And I remember Rick, the CEO of Fitness Together, had picked me and a business partner up, Aaron Crocker, and we were driving around looking. I think there were nine in Denver at that time, and we were looking at some of the locations. And we started just drilling Rick about the equipment package that was going to go in the studio and what was required and was there any flexibility on the type of equipment. And he said, no, you know, this is a model that we've proved to be successful, and here's the equipment you're going to have. And I remember me and Aaron were just really pushing back and saying, we have got to have a cable crossover. We have rehabilitated more backs with the cable crossover machine and a high-low pull, and we're going into all this technical speak. Rick just pulled the car over. I'll never forget. I'm like, what is this guy doing? He put his arm around the passenger seat, turned around, looked us both in the eyes, and he said, boys, did you come here to talk about equipment, or did you come here to buy a business that works? And I didn't truly understand what he was getting at. Like, I got the concept, but it was the first true challenge of someone saying, are you going to think like a business owner and how to grow something bigger than yourself, or are you going to continue to think about a technician approach and you being the product and doing all the work? So it really created an interesting opportunity, interesting conversation, and kind of turned us around of like, all right, you're right. We came here to buy something that works.
Now, this, of course, really translates into one of our favorite books that you and I give to a lot of different people, and it's the book, The E-Myth. Technician, manager, entrepreneur, three different people. There's so many people out there who are really good at a skill. They might be good at doing something in the culinary arts or in fitness, or they might be a welder. I don't know, but they're a technician, and they think that's enough license to become an entrepreneur. How important is it for somebody, first of all, to read that book, but also to understand the need to scale yourself if you're ever really going to go into business? Otherwise, you just own a job.
Yeah, it's hugely important. In fact, Rick put the E-Myth in my hand on that same trip, which was 2000, probably very early 2000 or early 2001 or late 2000, a long time ago. He put that book in my hand. It really opened my eyes to, I was going into this business thinking I was going to continue to remain a technician. And to truly build a business bigger than yourself and to scale, you have to have someone to wear all three of those hats, the technician, the manager, and the owner entrepreneur. And just because you're a good trainer does not mean you can run a good training business. And you can fill that blank in with any industry. Just because you're a good plumber does not mean you know how to run a good plumbing business. And that's basically the essence of that book. And so what I learned is all the skills that had served me well as a trainer were not necessarily the skills I needed to know and develop in order to grow a business. And the difference is huge, and understanding the difference and grasping it really can separate those who make it and those who continue to own a job the rest of their life and create a business that's all about them that they can never scale. And what ends up normally happening with that is the one thing you love to do becomes the one thing you hate to do. And that was a big enough motivation for me. I did not want to turn out hating fitness because it was all I knew and all I did every day.
Okay, so you actually have that conversation. You go through with it. You take the plunge and become a franchise owner of Fitness Together. What happens next?
So we had a really good start. Aaron and I both had existing client bases that transferred. We set the franchise record for opening revenue, but we were still doing all the coaching. These people had been with us for years at that point, and just to hand them off to staff was a really hard transition. I'll never forget the first time I started to try to hand off my clients to my trainers and how emotional it was and how scared I was. And I lost a few of them in the process. It's just natural. But once I learned how to market, how to manage, how to hire, how to scale and grow my business, I found this whole new skill set that I was really excited about. I found that I loved to learn. Although I was never a great student at Auburn, I loved learning about business because the more I grew as a business owner, the more I could scale and the more clients I could end up serving. There's only so many hours in a day. If I was the one doing all the training, I could maybe handle 25 to 30 clients. But through scaling myself, not only was I able to offer opportunity for staff, but I was able to serve more people with a better end product. So we started to scale ourselves. I went and opened the second one 6 months later. And I want to back up. I remember when Rick came to town, first of all, he was blown away by Birmingham. It was way more developed than he thought it was. He regretted what he sold the territory to us for because he pictured what most people think about when they think Alabama, barefoot and no TVs. And he got here and was blown away by the market. But I remember he spread a map out at dinner and he said, all right, guys, you're going to open here. 6 months later, you're going to open here. 6 months later, you're going to open here. And I mean, my eyes were as big as the plates in front of us going, no way we're going to pull that off. But we did. Someone spoke a vision into us and showed us what kind of stretched what we thought was possible. So we literally opened Fitness Together's about every 6 to 8 months for a couple of years and pretty quickly owned 6 locations here in Birmingham. Ended up buying Aaron out in that process. And also ended up just so excited about the model and excited about personal training in general inside the industry of fitness. It was just exploding. When I started in 96, no one had personal trainers, especially in Alabama. Everybody thought it was for the elite, it was for movie stars, it was for the rich. And by 2000, 2002, it was really becoming accepted. And what I saw was the same people who had gardeners and architects and bookkeepers and dentists, it was just personal training, it was just another service that they realized they needed to outsource to a professional. And so it was really the right time in the industry. And so I bought the rights to the states of Alabama, Florida, and North Carolina and became a master franchisee for the concept. And so then I started selling and developing stores in those 3 states, eventually getting to the point where I had 55 locations that I was overseeing in those 3 states.
All right, so this is an important part of your story because to me, this is where you go from the franchisee to more of the franchisor. Even though you aren't the franchisor starting the business from scratch and doing all the stuff we've had to do with Iron Tribe to build an FDD, franchise disclosure documents, and you know, find new franchisees and then support them and all that. But you kind of did have to do all the stuff that happens after that, that a franchisor does. So what was that like going from really owning a business and having EBITDA from store studios that you're trying to grow to really just trying to find the right people to open up gyms and support them so that their top line's growing and now your revenue stream comes from royalty? That's 2 different things.
Yeah, so I was one of the best operators in the system. I had won Franchisee of the Year like 3 years in a row. And I really came at it of thinking, man, if you just execute the model, it works, because that's all I had done. And it was a big eye-opener to me as I started selling and supporting locations, how people who will buy a franchise and still want to do it their own way. Which is very, it's just surprising all the way around when you buy a system and then you don't execute the system. So that was a big learning experience for me because I really approached it like just do what I did, and what I did was execute the model. So the great part about it was I learned a whole new skill set. I learned selling at a high level because it was a $200,000 to $300,000 investment So it was a big sale versus selling a $2,000 or $3,000 personal training package, a complete different process. I learned about brokeraging leases and site selection, just everything of how to get a store open, how to help someone hire their staff, how to replicate what I had done in the experience of my franchisees. And so there's some really great things about it. We had a lot of success, sold a lot of locations. I was doing really well for a young guy in business. But then there were some things that were not so great about it that started to take a toll on me. And number one was the amount of travel I was doing. Never expected to be on an airplane as much as I was. Had a young family, three kids at that time, and was traveling more than I wanted to, more than Mindy wanted me to. And also, the thing I didn't realize until much later in the process was how far removed I became from the actual product. Because as my master franchise started to take off, I sold my locations that I owned and operated in Birmingham. So I no longer had an office in a studio. I was no longer in the studio on a day-to-day basis. I had my own office on Highway 31, just a regular corporate office. I got too far from the product, and I wasn't around the clients anymore, and I wasn't hearing their transformation stories, and I just have to be around people improving their life through fitness. That is what makes me tick. That's what makes me excited. That's what makes me passionate. And so the combination of traveling and supporting franchisees a lot who weren't executing the model and being too far from the product, I started to grow disillusioned with what I was doing. Even though I was making great money, I was in the industry that I loved, and I started to really wonder what was next for me.
All right, so lesson one you learned, going from technician to entrepreneur, and it took a little bit, but you read books like The E-Myth, you studied hard. We skipped a little bit in that story of what you learned about marketing, which I want to touch on real quick. But the point is you learned how to go from being good at a skill set and go from there to being good as an entrepreneur in that industry where the skill set exists. Then lesson two, you learn what it takes to go from not just being good as an entrepreneur, but how to actually lead other entrepreneurs through being a master franchisee. These are two valuable lessons that most people can't get through the first one, let alone the second one. Before we go any further, though, let's go back to what happened here in Birmingham, why you were able to open up a new location every 6 months, and why you were able to scale as an owner what you scaled. And it really all goes back to the universal thing that helps any business scale, no matter what business it is, and that's marketing.
Yeah, if I were to add something to our earlier discussion, is the second I made the switch from being the independent personal trainer, Forrest Walden's personal fitness, to a business owner, I immediately became, my job was no longer the training of sessions or getting people in shape. My job immediately became marketing and selling the services of personal training, and huge difference there. So once I grasped that and realized I had no idea how to make the phone ring and no idea how to sell high-priced training services, I had to go out and study and figure out what it was. I got a little support from the corporate office, but not much. And so really it required a whole new skill set and learning a lot about direct response marketing and things that really drive sales. And turns out I really enjoyed it and created some unique marketing pieces that really worked and helped propel the success of not only my business, but the rest of our franchise as a whole. And to this day, it's one of the things I enjoy most is figuring out what type of marketing message is going to resonate to the right demographic. Because I feel like I have a fundamental responsibility to influence them to get in our doors so we can change their life. Because I believe in our product so much, I feel like the best thing I can do is get people in our doors. And so then I have to figure out, well, what's going to make the phone ring and what's going to make people come in and try us out so that we can really change their life.
So one night you're sitting at home and you're reading a trade magazine and you see an 800 number.
Yeah, I was reading a personal training magazine. I was frustrated. I had just opened my third store, and I needed something to get the phones ringing, and saw a space ad, a little ad in the, it didn't look like anything else in the magazine, and all it advertised was a free audio recording if you call this 800 number to how to generate more personal training clients. This is 2003. I called the number. It was a free recorded message. It was like a 4-minute message about how to generate more training clients. And then all it said at the end of the They said, at the beep, just leave your address. I'll mail you a free report, more information. So at the beep, I left my address, forgot about it. A week or so later, got a free report, and it was about 30 pages of how to market your personal training business. And I thought, man, this is exactly what I need. If there's tons of good information in the free stuff, I ought to see what they're selling. And I called the guy up and bought his kit. And it began a long relationship with a guy named Eric Ruth, who's a great copywriter. Just had lunch with him last week. And, you know, he wrote a couple of letters for us, direct response, sequential-based, multiple-step letters that absolutely transformed my business and opened my eyes to the power of direct response marketing and how different it is from brand marketing. And really became just a whole new interest and passion around understanding the emotion and psychology of selling and influencing.
And corporate ends up taking this campaign and spreading it around the country. This was something that he built for you that you were able to kind of filter back up through the entire brand.
Yeah, it was such a game changer for our stores. The rest of the stores started calling up and saying, what is going on in Birmingham, Alabama? How are you leading the chain? And so just shared some things I was doing. That was one of them. And yeah, it became a pretty much a national campaign for the brand.
All right, so you go from technician to entrepreneur, from entrepreneur to master franchisee, learning a lot of the things that a franchisor is responsible for. And during that time, you talked about maybe getting a little too far away from the product. And so you ended up getting your passion back for fitness, and especially getting that competitive engine that's inherently inside of you kind of filled through doing some workouts with some friends. And that's really where the Iron Tribe story starts to begin.
Yeah, I think it was a collection of a couple things. Number one, I saw the industry changing. I mentioned before I was in the right place at the right time by God's grace. That when we came on the scene, one-on-one personal training was just exploding. And slowly, over time, 2004, 2005, 2006 especially, started seeing a lot of group fitness hitting the market, from boot camps to sport-specific training to CrossFit to D1, whole plethora of group options, and we didn't offer any of that at Fitness Together. And I was on the leadership team, the franchise advisory council for that brand, and I started expressing my frustration that we were so limited in our offerings, and they didn't really want to innovate. They wanted to remain as one-on-one personal training, and I was at a point where I was getting older, I was a dad, and bodybuilding was just not logical anymore, and my wife hated it. So that was kind of out, and I had no competitive outlet. And so I quit my garage, invited some friends over, and just started working out with my friends more in a group-based environment, and fell in love with it. And so the dichotomy of going on the road and seeing high-priced personal training throughout my three states that honestly was not delivering the results that I thought we should. I mean, here were clients paying $600, $700, $800 a month for training, and I wasn't seeing the type of raving fan testimonials from our product that I thought I should. And then comparing that with what I was seeing in my garage, where guys were getting in phenomenal shape and increasing, hitting PRs on lifts and PRs on 5Ks and just all this crazy stuff we were doing together. And I thought, you know, this would be so much fun just to start completely over, do it in a group-based model, and really bring a better product to the customer for a lower price point. Because I knew that with the scale of group that we could bring it to the market for a third of what they were paying for personal training.
So you thought that, you realized that goes in your head, but how do you go from hanging out in your garage, working out with friends, seeing all those results, and having that thought to actually saying, all right, I'm actually going to put my money where my mouth is, so to speak, with all of the assets you would have to part with, and negotiating that with Fitness Together, what did that look like?
It was not an overnight decision. In fact, it was at least 18 months where I went back and forth 100 times. And I kept saying, man, why would I give up what I've built? I'm being foolish to think there's more out there. Do I really want to start over? I mean, at this point, I had sold all my locations. My name was on no leases. I had no debt. I had all these stores. It was essentially mailbox money, making royalty off their gross. And I was like, why would I walk away from that? But at the end of the day, I wasn't satisfied. And I knew that there was a better business to be had for our customers. And so over a period of 18 months of praying, of journaling, of seeking advisors, of talking with my wife, I ultimately came to the conclusion that I had to do this. And the way it played out with Fitness Together, I just told them I wanted to go more group, and they wanted my territory back. And so it was pretty easy. They purchased my three states back and are still operating them to this day as a corporate entity. And they released me to go try something new. And that was February of 2010, literally the same month that I opened the first Iron Tribe. I closed the deal to sell my territories back to Fitness Together.
So when you open up Iron Tribe, you have the core group of people that were in your garage. You have a very communal place here in Birmingham, Homewood, where word can spread fast, and you had a pretty good sphere of influence already. But was it what you expected in that first 6 to 12 months when you opened up the gym, as far as who showed up, how fast they would show up? I mean, I was one of the first clients. It was like wildfire.
It was like wildfire. And I think, you know, we hit so many elements right coming out of the gate. Number one, again, we were just in the right place at the right time. It was the right model for the right time. Group was exploding. And took a lot of what I had learned. We built all the branding and the marketing around direct response marketing. We had a cap. We sold against that cap of membership, so there was scarcity going on. We sold it out really fast, as you're alluding to. But I think the biggest surprise to me was who showed up. And it wasn't who I thought it was going to be, a younger, more competitive clientele that was there to compete and, you know, take their fitness to the next level. But really who showed up was the same type of customers I had been seeing at Fitness Together, who had been paying for a personal trainer $600-$800 a month, and they recognized that they could have a better workout, better results for, again, a third of the price. So that was a big eye-opener, that most of the people who walked through our doors had experienced coaching at some level. Most with personal trainers, but some with boot camps or some other group competitor.
And it also made you feel like it was more scalable than you already thought it was, because there's more of those folks out there.
Yeah, we had huge goals opening up, but when I saw that this was really reaching mainstream America, where number one, we can affect the most change. Number two, they have the demographics at their hands to afford a premium product. And number three, as you alluded to, it allows us to scale, because that is the heartbeat of you know, every city in America is this 35 to 55 professional, upwardly mobile demographic. I knew if we could create a product that appealed to them, that this was going to be universally scalable, not just in Birmingham.
So seeing the first gym grow that fast, did you have a clue that it was going to grow that fast if you were going to go multiple locations and even try to franchise? I know that's something you said you wanted to do from the beginning, but it must have been tough to gauge how fast you could or could not do that at the beginning versus what actually ended up happening.
Well, I think we should back up a minute, because the goal from the beginning was to franchise the model. I saw a void in the marketplace for a group fitness brand that was a premium provider to the right demographic. So that was the goal and the model. And in fact, I remember when I hired Trey Griffin, who is now our VP of corporate operations, he was the first coach. And I remember telling him, we're gonna open 6 in Birmingham, then we're gonna franchise it, we're gonna be nationwide. And he would tell you to this day, he kind of laughed and didn't believe me, but it was, from the beginning, it was a big vision. I wasn't gonna sell everything I had built with Fitness Together to just open a gym in Homewood. I mean, that was non-negotiable. That was not big enough to get excited about, nor ever replace the income I had left. So I was gambling big, but the speed with which the market embraced the first and then the second location really did allow us to grow as fast as I had ever dreamed. And so, similar to FT 10 years or 12 years earlier, we opened, you know, several almost like clockwork, at least one a year, and then two a year after that to really hit that six pretty quickly.
I remember coming up to you, I guess it was late spring 2010. As I said before, I was one of the first clients at Iron Tribe, and I don't know if I've ever shared that with our audience before, but my wife and I were both one of the first couple clients at Iron Tribe, and we were watching it grow just like everybody else was, like wildfire in Homewood.
Should you mention to the audience that you never paid while you're telling your story?
Yeah, yeah, I never paid. I am a natural salesman and use my sales skills on this salesman you're listening to, and it was a clash of the minds. No, seriously, what I did was offered some video work for Forrest when he was getting his website going, and we did a little trade out. But what he doesn't like to talk about is there's still credit left on that trade out. But in all seriousness, we watched it grow like wildfire, and I'd say it was maybe 90 days in. You and I had talked a little bit outside of class, and you actually gave me a book. I remember it was The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. But we finally got coffee, and I just asked you, I said, how do you see this thing going? And I remember you telling me you wanted to franchise it. A lot of what you just said, and of course, that led to the conversations of us potentially working together and me opening up the second ever Iron Tribe gym. But to think that the second gym, that I opened it up literally a year, almost to the day after you opened the first, it was 10 miles away. And on that week, while I was opening up our second ever Iron Tribe gym, you were across the sea in Ethiopia adopting your son Benjamin. I mean, it's pretty crazy to think about that. Even now, as we see Benjamin growing up, I mean, it's just talk about that whole experience, and you can even weave in the adoption and what you were going through spiritually as it led into Iron Tribe.
Well, you know, we did open a year to the date, but if you'll remember how frustrated we were, how long that process took. We lost 3 months because TJ Maxx wouldn't sign off on the parking.
Fitness clause.
Yeah, because yeah. They had a no fitness clause in the center. And so we were trying to be even more aggressive than that. We wanted to be open by October.
We were ready.
Yeah, and so it didn't happen until January, but that's all in God's timing. But yeah, we were aggressive. You approached me about joining. You had no problems believing in my big dreams. You saw it from the beginning. This thing had legs and could scale. And you came along at just a pivotal time to take the leadership on the second store, and really wanted that second store to be the franchise prototype where you operated it and I didn't, and you made it successful without my direct influence, because we knew we were going to be answering questions like, well, I'm not Forrest, or I don't have my friends from my garage starting. You know, we really wanted to make it a true franchise expression. And then, yeah, just, I mean, we'd been trying to adopt for almost 3 years at that point, and then to get the call that this is when you're supposed to be here for court, the fact that my business was opening was kind of irrelevant at that point. It was, yes, we'll buy the plane tickets, and yes, we'll be in Ethiopia for those dates. So it was pretty an awesome experience to be there and know that already a year in, we had a team built that could handle opening the gym without me even being there. And I mean, even as recently as this weekend, we opened a gym today in Birmingham, and I was out of town all weekend. And so, you know, still to this day, I'm still blessed to know that I have a team that can execute and open brand new locations without my influence. But yeah, a year in, to be able to do that was incredible. And, you know, even part of that process of starting over, I knew for sure that I was supposed to sell my Fitness Together business. But I thought, you know, really during that 18-month period when I was back and forth about what was next, I'd been on a lot of mission trips and had seen so much desperate need overseas in India and Sudan and Cambodia and Mexico, and lack of clean water, and ended up starting a nonprofit with a couple friends of mine named Never Thirst, which is a ministry that puts in clean water filtration systems and rain tanks and biosand filters in some of the poorest and hardest to reach places in the world, and does it through the local church. And so we offer physical water, but we also introduce the living water that's found in Jesus Christ. And I thought that that's what God was setting me up to do. And he made it so clear to me that he had given me passions and abilities in other areas, especially in business and fitness. And so when Iron Tribe was born, it was very clear to me that I was supposed to combine those two passions. So part of traveling overseas and being exposed to that was seeing orphans and just seeing the crisis of the orphans in third world countries. And so we brought our son home, Benjamin, from Ethiopia, May of that year. We were there for the court date in January when 280 opened, and 4 months later got to actually go and bring him home. But to be able to marry the growth of this business with the growth of Never Thirst, and now to have seen over $8 million raised and over, I don't remember how many water projects we're up to now, it's staggering. But to know that Iron Tribe has been one of the largest donors to Never Thirst as it has grown is ultimately the most satisfying part of what we've done to date.
It's pretty amazing to think about. Even looking back at the grand opening event at Homewood, which was for Never Thirst, and then the first real Workout for Water event, which took place later, I believe in 2011 mm-hmm. in the fall. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, every year since, we've been able to run that event. And this year we're hoping to beat last year, which was more than $500,000 between Birmingham and the franchises. It's incredible. And if you want to know more about Workout for Water, go to firstneverthirst.org. And if you go to neverthirst.org, you can learn more about Workout for Water, along with maybe how you want to get involved. Okay, so switching gears, we open up that second gym. And like you said, we were able to prove out a lot. We had 100 clients in 90 days. I think it was actually 97 clients in 90 days. But it really was the beginning of our learning experience, because we started to learn a lot, me and you did, after that. So I step out after 90 days and you and I start building the franchise model, right? So from trying to organize all the operational systems and develop some of them to building the franchise disclosure documents and filing them with the Federal Trade Commission, all this stuff's going on. And at the same time, we're looking for real estate because we want to open more gyms in Birmingham, continue to prove things out as operators, and build a corporate office. So all that's going on. And at the same time, that second gym started to stagnate a little bit for a few months. We started to realize that, just like any other business, the leader is still the most important thing. And we ended up righting the ship and getting our leader there, who is your first ever hire, Trey Griffin, took over that gym. We got it right. And 280 ends up becoming the second best gym in the chain still to this day. It's right there with Homewood. But that whole experience, I think, was the beginning of where we still are now, which is learning about the importance of leadership and how to scale yourself and how to find the right people and so on and so forth. Just talk about your philosophy on that and how we've evolved it for the brand.
Yeah, I think if you look at, again, it goes back to what I experienced as a franchisee and a master franchisee. It always frustrated me that my franchisor did not own, operate, and execute their own model. And so when we set goals for Iron Tribe, I knew we wanted to be an execution-based model and that we wanted to be the best operators in our chain. And to this day, that's our goal and that's what we do. And so part of that is that we test and prove everything that we do before we roll it to our franchisees. And ultimately, marketing's great, event planning's great, I mean, fill in the blank is great, but if you don't have the right team, and if you don't have the right leader in each location, you will not be able to execute this model. We are a service-based business. We are not transactional. We're not serving a product. We're not serving a hot cup of coffee or a delicious sandwich. We're selling a relationship. And not only that, you have to be proficient in movement and be able to triage movement and all the things that our coaches do. But at the end of the day, clients want to know that you know their name, that you care about them, that you know what their goals are. And So much intangibles go into it, and it all comes down to the leader, as you alluded to, Jim. And so what we've learned is we have to spend so much time identifying the right hires, putting them through hoops to make sure they're the right hires before we ever hire them, and then build an ironclad on-ramp system where we take them through weeks of training where they learn everything from our purpose and our mission and our core values to exactly what the Iron Tribe experience is to be delivered on the floor. And so as we started to build those systems for our corporate gyms, as we opened 2012, we opened two more gyms. 2013, we opened two more gyms. We were up to six quickly. we were scrambling to build this stuff for our own corporate gyms, but at the same time, dude, we were building the systems that would sustain the rest of the model. And so what we built for those early gyms still to this day are the backbones of the things we train. I mean, just now I got done with my workout and a little girl grabbed me from Memphis and introduced herself. She's down here training as a coach. The 3 weeks she'll spend here will be invaluable to that franchisee in Memphis as she gets exposed to our culture, she gets exposed to how we own and operate our gyms, and she gets what it's supposed to look like and how the delivery is supposed to be delivered. So really, our need to expand locally drove what we had to create to expand nationally.
And so for anybody who wants to, first of all, before we even keep going, you're listening, you're interested in what it could look like being one of these people that Forrest is talking about, irontribefitness.com/career is a great place to go to learn about what we've built for you, which is a career opportunity in fitness, Forrest. And so as we've grown, we've realized more and more, we knew it before, but people is really relationships. That's what is at the core of what Iron Tribe is delivering. And it's so important to have the right people. And so we've learned tough lessons in our own gyms and in franchising on it's even more important than we thought that we have the right people, right? And so how important has it been as we've moved forward to really define our core values and our mission and continue to refine them even though they were created at the beginning so that we are finding the exact right people at every level, owner of a franchise, manager of any gym, franchise or corporate, or coach delivering that class experience?
Yeah, it's been huge. And I think what ultimately will show how huge it is that 50% of our evaluations are based on how our people live out our core values. And so where the rubber meets the road is how do you measure and hold accountable people to your core values so they're not just some ethereal, mystical statement on the wall that they hear about when they get hired and never to be talked about again. How does it become a living, breathing guidepost to how we do business? And that's how we've done it. So it's taught during the on-ramp, it's repeated in every staff meeting, and then ultimately in evaluations, they're held accountable to how they're living those things out. And we've created very subjective ways to measure each of our 9 core values. So it's huge.
Okay, so fast forward to today. We are at 40 gyms and continuing to grow, but we have learned how to control our growth based on having the right people and not just how many gyms we can say we have open, because we're in it to be around for a long period of time. So if you're to sum up the last 3 years of franchising since you already talked about us opening our own gyms, how would you summarize it, and then how would you lead into where this brand can go?
So I think we got some super fast momentum in the beginning, primarily based through clients who had a great experience at our gyms here in Birmingham, had a great brand experience, a personal transformation story, resonated with our mission and values, and really wanted to replicate what we had done with Birmingham and other markets. And really felt like that was going to be a slam dunk for the type of franchisee we wanted, because A, they understood the model, they'd experienced as a client, and most of the clients showing interest were already business owners. But inherent in that is that they were Birmingham residents with Birmingham-based businesses. And so real quickly, we ended up with a lot of locations sold to off-site owners. And this is a very people-intensive but also time-sensitive business where we're open a lot of hours, 6 days a week, and really we need to have someone there who owns and operates the gym on site or is very engaged as an owner leading their team. And so that was a bit of a transition and a learning period for us. We created a bunch of tools to help teach off-site owners how to be engaged and how to lead off-site teams. It's not easy, but it can be done, and we have several franchisees who are doing that successfully. So once we navigated those waters and really learned who our avatar is as a franchisee, it's allowed us to rebuild our sales process, slow down a little bit on the sales, as you just alluded to, and really focus on opening gyms that operate very successfully and maybe a little bit slower of a brand growth story, which is okay with us, because we're in it for the long haul. And I think we're at a place now where we're stabilized, we're focused on the product, innovating the product, really taking stock on the industry and where fitness is going and what our customers are telling us that they're needing. And we've already made a lot of changes to make this program more scalable and more adaptable to more people. And we're seeing even a further skewing of who our clients, what they look like and how old they are and what their fitness levels are coming into the program. But we think we can take that even to the next level. So honestly, I'm more excited right now about where we are and where we could go because we've done so much of the hard work of building a foundation and an architecture that we can now pipe the latest trends, the latest research, and the latest programming options through this architecture.
So when you look at the industry, you feel just as good or better than you've ever felt, and you feel like Iron Tribe's right place, right time to continue to leverage what it does best.
I do, and the reason I say that, I go back to anyone who's ever come through a discovery day here at our office, which is a day with us to determine if they want to be a franchise partner, has always asked me, Forrest, is this a fad? Is high intensity functional fitness in a group delivery, competitive atmosphere, is that a fad? And I've always said it's not a fad because I think community's here to stay, I think competition's here to stay, and I think results are here to stay. However, how those three things are delivered could change drastically. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of that in the industry now. I mean, everything from the gamification of the experience that Orange Theory does really well with calories and building gyms that look like nightclubs and really focusing on EPOC, with exercise post-op consumption, heart rate monitors, emails that tell you how many calories you burn. Really interested in wearable technology, and as the technology gets better and better, can track not just footsteps like a pedometer, but really heart rate and intensity and movement patterns. And there's just so much more that's opening up. I know that you and I are very interested in that field and how that's going to relate to us. And you look at big companies like Under Armour buying up all the fitness apps, and it's just so much change is coming. And so what we believe is the actual programming at the end of the day can adapt because we have a very open floor space plan. We have phenomenal coaches. We know how to create community. And really feel like if we continue to focus on those things and then stick with whatever the latest trends are that are coming down the pipe, some of the things I alluded to, that we can create something that is sustainable and be around a long time, whether or not people are wanting to snatch and rope climb in 5 years or if they're wanting to do more of a high-intensity interval training HIIT program. We feel like we can adapt and really offer that to our customers.
Hey, you talked about pedometer, and I do want to mention you are in a pretty fierce league right now. And I don't know, I saw the standings last week. It didn't look too good. It looked like you finished last place in your pedometer league, and you lost to your mom.
I did lose to my mom. So I do wear a pedometer, and my daughter, my 13-year-old daughter, set up a challenge with me, her, my mom, and my stepdad. And man, I'm a little more sedentary than I thought sitting behind this desk, but my goal is 10,000.
Welcome to the executive team.
Yes, 10,000 steps a day is always a struggle, but I managed to get it.
Okay, so you've learned a lot, Shirley, and we've talked about some of the lessons. So we went back from technician to entrepreneur, and during that journey, you learned how to be a marketer, a direct response marketer. And then from entrepreneur to franchisor, even though you were doing as a master franchisee. And then, of course, with Iron Tribe, I think the biggest thing you've learned is leadership. How to go from Forrest, the business owner or entrepreneur, to Forrest, the CEO, with a leadership team and a business partner and multiple business partners. My biggest question to you is, what's one of the biggest lessons you've learned that you feel like you could share with the audience? And it could be something that's business, could be something that's personal, could be something that's a little bit of both. What's a big aha lesson you've learned through all these experiences that's made you better?
Well, I've always heard business is a team sport, so invest in your team. I've always heard make sure you're the dumbest guy in the room and make sure you surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. But I think my default was always, I understood that stuff, but I always was just a hard worker and could get things done and didn't spend the necessary time to recruit and build the team around me. And this brand has forced me to do that. And now with a leadership team, with Jim, you as the president, and a full suite of VPs who are all excellent at what they do, I think probably the biggest thing that we've done has been installing the meeting rhythm into this company, where we have set meetings weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annually that are in the calendar, locked in stone, where we get offsite, we put our phones away, and have a pretty rigorous schedule that we adhere to make sure that we are talking about the biggest blocks of this business. We call them big rocks, and that we're ideating about the future and talking about where we need to go. That's been such a game changer. And honestly, I used to dread meetings, and I thought meetings were a waste of time. And what I've learned through experiencing it firsthand, but also reading about it through guys like Patrick Lencioni, is the way you lead is through meetings and through having effective meetings. And so some of my favorite days now is locked away with a leadership team in our offsite meetings, really going to task on what needs to be done. And sometimes those are confrontational meetings, and you see different silos having different of the business having different opinions on what needs to be focused on. But at the end of the day, when we make a decision, everyone has said their piece, and we step out of those meetings locked arms and resolved to focus on the problems that we selected as a team. So that's been the biggest game changer. If you've got a business of any size, you need to have a leadership team that's helping you speak into the vision and the decisions that you're making for the brand.
Yeah, we have definitely de-siloed our leadership team. Just looking at the conversations from a year ago to today in those meetings, we've eliminated cross, or we've established, excuse me, cross-departmentalization. You mentioned Lencioni. Anybody else you recommend for people listening on that topic that they should read, talk to, etc.?
On that topic, obviously I'm partial to Infusionsoft's Elite Forum that we did together.
Yeah.
It was amazing. That's a great resource.
It is.
But probably Lencioni's the best on that particular topic.
Okay, so I think it's a great thing to segue into as we end this thing. It's an amazing story. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that don't know this story that are blown away by it. And I guess where I want to go is just personally. So a lot of people don't know you, right? You know, unless you break past the facade with Forrest, you don't get to see that you're hilarious. You probably have one of the best sense of humors that I've been around, and you can surprise people two times with some of the funniest jokes. You're extremely competitive, but you're also like one of the best sports. You're gracious in everything you do. You're giving. There's so many great things about you. And so what I wanted to ask you about is, we met a guy about, I guess, 3 years ago who talked to us about how we come off to other people. And he put me in my place and let me see things that I don't mean, but I can control with my micro-messaging, he called it, right? And he's helped you do that too. Tell the story of Michael Olasso, that's the guy's name, and how he taught you to break down walls so people can see this fat side of Forrest that I'm talking about that's so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this will be a transparent portion of the interview here, but Olasso was one of our speakers at a Vistage meeting, which is a CEO group both Jim and I were members of at the time. And he is a communications coach. He's does everything from Broadway plays to teaching some of the highest level politicians on how to campaign and speak better. And he nailed me. I mean, he just broke me down in 1 3-hour meeting, so much so that I begged to take him to dinner to pick his brain even more. And look, I'm a natural introvert. In fact, on the Myers-Briggs scale, I'm 100% I for introvert. Jim is 100% E for extrovert, so it makes us a good combination. I have no problem going on stage and public speaking and all that, but chit-chatting and small talk and social settings are not my thing. And it can come across very abrasive. A lot of people think that I'm conceited and stuck up. And
which is furthest from the truth.
Yeah, I don't care about people. And so I've really had to do a lot of reflecting on how I come across when I don't realize it. Everything from the way I listen to the look on my face to remembering just to stop and ask someone how their weekend was. And this is still a work in progress, but really diving into that and learning that it matters to know your server's name when you're at a restaurant and to stop and ask people what's going on in their life and understand that when I'm walking through a room or I'm walking in to the office in the morning, the look on my face is sends a message to the rest of the team that can affect the entire mood. And literally something that I work on every day because it does not come natural. Jim, you're one of the best networkers I've ever seen. And I've learned from that, but I have to force myself to do it where it comes natural and it's fun to you. I've really had to teach myself that there's value in relationships and I can leverage those relationships to grow business and personal. And so it's just something I've had to work on being such a strong introvert. And it's really helped me become well-rounded. And I think for you, you've worked on some of the opposite things because those things come so easy, but some of the things that come easy to me come hard to you. And that's just the beautiful thing about how God created us all so unique and different, and there's strengths and weaknesses to every personality style. But to answer your question, the biggest thing is being more thoughtful and contemplative and telling people what they mean to me, because some of the biggest feedback is people never know where they stand with me. And so to make an effort, whether it's my wife or someone at work, to let them know when they've done a good job and not just expect them to know it because I didn't get on to them.
Well, and how awesome is it to be able to blend something you learn in business with personal life too and be able to have more meaningful conversations through that. He uses the abbreviation TSP.
That's right. So TSP is truthful, specific, positive feedback. And it's the way to give a compliment. You can't just say, hey, good job, or great job, or you're awesome, or keep up the good work. That doesn't mean anything to anybody. But if you stop to give something to someone that is truthful, that is specific, and is positive, man, it will make all the difference. And I literally have a goal to do that every day. And don't always hit it, but really try to at least stop and do that one time a day with somebody.
That's awesome. Okay, so Forrest, you're a tenacious continuing education guy. One of our core values, we develop ourselves to help others realize their potential. What do you listen to when you're in your car?
Very rarely is it music. If it is music, it's probably like Coldplay or Mumford & Sons or something like that, but very rarely. It's typically a podcast. Big follower of Dave Ramsey. I still listen to his just regular radio show. Really like his wisdom. And I love Entree Leadership, which is his business podcast. I would recommend anybody dive into Entree Leadership, even if you're not a business owner. It's just phenomenal. I like Tim Ferriss. I wish his podcasts weren't 2 hours, but I like listening to those when I can. And I follow my former pastor, David Platt. Pretty much anything that he puts out through his podcast, Radical Together. And that's probably most of what I listen to in my core.
Book-wise, you and I are always trading books, talking about books, so I don't want to be too general with my question. Let's just talk about what books you've read lately that you'd recommend, or maybe there's some legendary books like E-Myth from 20 years ago that you'd recommend as well, but recommend some books for our listeners.
You know, I'm a big fan of biographies. And about to put one in your hand for your trip to Cambodia next month that's gonna rock your world. And everybody, you know, when you think biography, Steve Jobs was a phenomenal biography, but I loved the Arnold Schwarzenegger biography, Total Recall, and I know put it in your hands and you loved it as well. And people underestimate his story. We have such short attention spans. All we think about is the marital infidelity, as bad as that is. I just love that here's a guy who was born in Austria, and he told his dad at 12 years old that he was going to be the best built man in America, he was going to star in movies, he was going to be a real estate mogul, and then he was going to politics. at 12 years old, and he did all of that. And you just thumb through that book and you look at the pictures, and his friends are some of the most famous people on the earth. And just love his story. And of course, he was the most famous bodybuilder that ever lived. He's just a phenomenal guy. So pick up Total Recall. You will be glad you did.
That's awesome. Any business books? Any other books?
I mean, gosh, I could go on forever. Good to Great. Anything Jim Collins writes, you should read. Dan Kennedy, another favorite of mine. His No BS series that we had the opportunity to co-author one of those. He's written 14 now. Those are phenomenal books.
So to wrap it up, for people listening who are potential Iron Tribe clients, they have not done this yet. Just talk to them on why they should try Iron Tribe.
Yeah, I think ultimately it comes down, I mean, we have beautiful facilities. We have great programming. We have everything thought out for you, from how to on-ramp and get started to how to sustain and be able to do it for the long term. But ultimately, we have the best people. We have put so much into hiring and developing our coaches that they're going to take an interest in you. You are not going to be a number at our gym. We are going to know your first name. We're probably going to know your spouse and kids' names for that matter. And we're going to get you in the best shape of your life. And that's going to be great, but you're going to gain a community that is positive. Every day you're better off for having been there. You're going to make some of your best friends there, probably some of your key business transactions there. This is going to be a self-funding membership, whether it's a reduction of insurance premiums or because you landed a new account, because you rubbed elbows with someone you never would have met before, or the fact that you're just healthier and you got off all your medication. Now, this thing's going to pay for itself, and you're going to look back and say, this is some of the best ROI I have ever spent on myself, and that's our brand promise to you.
That's awesome. IronTribeFitness.com. You can find the nearest location to you. You've been listening to Forrest Walden. I get the pleasure of calling him my business partner, but to you, he's the founder, creator of Iron Tribe Fitness, started in his garage. He is our CEO, and Forrest, I'm just so happy that you took the time to do this. I know that we're literally, our offices are next to each other, and I've been doing this podcast now for about a half a year, but this has been a pleasure. I'm really glad you came out.
Thanks for having me on, Jim.